Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we like to call it, real debate without the hate. Hello, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'm a television writer. I live in Los Angeles. I consider myself to be a political social media activist. Part of what I do is I founded Open Fire, a big debate group on Facebook. I hope you'll look us up.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Kushmider. I'm a social policy advocate, a freelance writer, and a stay-at-home mom from Kensington, Maryland.
I'm DJ McGuire, an economics instructor, cost estimator, and current victim of the standard sci-fi convention illness known as con crud.
Oh, no.
Stay away from Suffolk, Virginia, folks.
Oh, DJ, I hope you feel better. And I'm Greg Matuzak, a teacher and veteran of many political campaigns from Cincinnati, Ohio. Hear them routing Bengals, because we just beat Cleveland.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah.
Everyone has beaten Cleveland. Cleveland is the most beaten football team there is.
The Bengals will take it where we can get it.
Yes, take those victories where you can get it. Congratulations to your team. DJ, please don't sneeze into your mic. I don't want to catch what you've got. And Rebecca, hi. So The More Perfect Union can now be heard on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Facebook, and at our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where you can also find written commentary by DJ and others. I just actually posted an article today that we're going to talk about later in the show. And you can also find Rebecca's writing at her website, stayathomepundit.com, where she likes to muse about politics and other topics that tickle her fancy. But even more exciting than that, Rebecca, weren't you published someplace else this week?
Oh, yes. I was published on one of the great in-depth investigative news outlets of our time, that being foxnews.com. In a roundup of tweets. I know. But I'm not the most liberal person quoted in the article. Shannon Watts of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense was also in there. I'm in rarefied company. But it was a roundup of nasty things people said about Donald Trump pardoning a turkey. And I was included. So a real think piece.
So happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We hope that everybody had a wonderful holiday weekend. Now, as we get back to the business of our country, boy, there's a couple of big items that are going to be decided in the next few weeks, not the least of which, and probably the most important of which, is net neutrality. Rebecca, where do we stand with this thing? I understand it looks like the votes to do away with net neutrality are at the FCC, but no one's quite sure yet.
No, I think we're in a holding pattern. I think continues to be a comment period before the final vote. But the chairman of the FCC has indicated his willingness and intent to do away with net neutrality. And as I understand it, and I'm certain there's somebody more technologically savvy listening to this who will write in our comments all the ways in which I am getting this wrong. But as I understand it, net neutrality rules have basically stated that the information superhighway, the speed limit is the same for everybody, whether you're a big website, a small website, and your ISP, your internet service provider, can't slow down your path on the cyber waves, no matter, you know, what your status is. Net neutrality would potentially change that, allowing service providers to add tolls, block some traffic. That, you know, Verizon could theoretically make Amazon Prime stream slower for their customers, so to drive them back to Verizon content. It could tier the internet in some ways that I don't think would be good for consumers or potentially for e-commerce, especially small business e-commerce. Because if you don't want to pay a premium to get the bandwidth, you're going to be in trouble.
You know what I found out at Thanksgiving? I found out that nobody knows what net neutrality means, because I was sitting with a group of people that were talking about it, and there were six different definitions of what the horrible things were. I mean, you couldn't believe some of the things that people think are going to happen. And they're people that are basically liberals that want to keep net neutrality. But they have this array of ideas about what's going to happen. That's about.
Well, did any of them sound like what I just said? How far off am I?
No, I think you're right. You're pretty on target. Yeah,
you had most of it, Rebecca. But what net? It's about more than just speed. It's also about whether or not ISPs can use price discrimination, which is an economic term essentially for using price to steer people to preferred content or various other things. So it's not just speed, although that's one aspect of this. It has actually gotten so bad, though, in terms of the confusion here, that a member of Congress, actually from California, actually put up a meme talking about what net neutrality is. And in describing what net neutrality is, the meme actually talked about what many economists are concerned could happen if net neutrality goes away, namely internet service providers bundling their service along with their content and other things as a way of cross-subsidizing into what were otherwise competitive markets. So it really says something when a member of Congress actually gets net neutrality completely reversed of what it actually is.
Well, here's the thing. You just DJ, you just explained it precisely, but in terms that 99% of people don't understand. Now, can you take what you just said and put it into what I would call English?
Sure. Essentially,
economics is the most arcane.
No, there's nothing wrong with what you said.
DJ, how about this, DJ? How about DJ? Pretend I know nothing about economics.
That's not a pretend.
Pretend. What are you talking about? No. Essentially, what it means is this: what it means is internet service providers cannot. What net neutrality says is an internet service provider cannot in any way give you an incentive to go to content which they own or which they have a business partnership, as opposed to content which they don't own. That means they can't charge you more for content that they don't control. They can't provide worse service on content they don't control, such as slowing it down on speed. That's essentially what net neutrality means.
This whole idea of regulations and legislative structure or potential legislative structure being 5 years behind technology reminds me of cases I read when I studied copyright law in graduate school, which was an elective for me because that's normal and fun. But you know, there were so many situations where the technology was existing and people were using it in unexpected ways. And there's all this black letter case law that sort of half catches up on it. And it's why you have rules about who can broadcast NFL games in bars now.
I'm going to tag on to what Rebecca has to say. We have congressmen and elected officials who literally bring snowballs into the Senate floors and say, look, climate change, or look, there's no climate change. I have a snowball. And these guys are quote unquote science aficionados. And of course, we're baffled that they're 5 years behind technology. I'm surprised that these guys aren't still making steam machinery regulations with how smart they are. I mean, it boggles my mind. Of course they're not. They should not even be anywhere near a computer. They have no concept. What was Ted Stevens' famous line? How does the internet work? Well, it's a series of pipes. And
tubes.
Tubes. It's a series of tubes.
For people who don't know, he was a United States Senator.
In terms of Congress and science,
yeah,
the Republican chair of the Science Committee in the House was just caught sending nude photos of himself to women, not his wife. So this is the level. I think a little net neutrality actually might help him.
Yeah, maybe we should be for it. Okay, so we've decided that net neutrality is either good or bad, and we're either for it or against it.
Something like that. Something
yes,
like
well
that.
Done us.
Well done us.
It's all about us. It's all about us and our access
well,
to porn.
Now let's confuse our listeners with another issue that nobody understands, the CFPC. The CFPB. Greg.
The Consumers Financial Protection Bureau.
Right.
Consumer. Not plural.
Greg, should
singular.
We be for it or against
consumer.
It?
Just one consumer.
Well, what Just I Robert love about Mercer. It, what I love about it is one, up until a couple of days ago, it was headed by Ohioan Richard Cordray. And he left this week mysteriously for some reason, but we all know why he left. He left in a huff to run for governor of the great state of Ohio. And because
he had already submitted his letter of resignation, but it wasn't supposed to kick in until next week. And he preemptively quit and did what?
He preemptively quit and said that his his assistant should take charge. Someone by the name of last name English. I'm trying to remember the first name. Leandra English. Okay. So he says English. Leandra English says, my assistant's got this. Hold my beer. I'm out of here. I'm going to go kick that asshole Kasich out of the governor's chair. And by the way, I think Cordray is awesome. So I really hope he does it. Meanwhile, at the same time, Trump goes, no. I'm going to put my guy in there. And so this is what's going to happen. We've got almost 12 hours till we're taping on Sunday night. We've got 12 hours till the office opens, and we don't know who actually will be in. Trump has put in Mick Mulvaney. Who has another job and has gone on record to say that the CFPB is a joke and should be terrible. This is like putting someone horrible like Rick Perry in charge of the Department of Energy.
An alert. From the Post, the agency is suing to stop Mulvaney from taking over.
The battle over
Consumer Financial Protection Bureau intensifies as agency official sues to stop Trump from installing acting director. Leandra English. Oh, wait, is she? This is a developing story. It will be updated.
She's the deputy director. She was appointed deputy director by
a court filing contends that he does not have the power to replace her.
Right. And all the GOP senators and all the GOP people are like, no, this should go to the House and we should appoint someone because it's a separate body. It has no oversight. And that's how it was set up.
And frankly, frankly, that is half the problem. The notion that an agency can be created and essentially shunted off out there and be completely unaccountable to any elected official is a ridiculous idea and frankly ludicrous. It is anti-democratic. I would actually call it anti-American, but there's so much of that going around that by now that people wouldn't know what the hell I'm talking about anymore. Because anti-American stuff apparently happens in Washington every day now. Check 1600 right. Pennsylvania Avenue. But the fact of the matter is, this is not an organization that should exist in its current structure at all. It should be part of the Treasury Department. It should be part of the political appointee apparatus. It should not be something that was shunted off to the Federal Reserve so that essentially no one who was elected could have any control over it. This is a problem, and this is frankly something that we as Democrats, because I am one now again, have to focus on and acknowledge that we dropped the ball here, is that Democrats spent so much time beating up on the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, and hey, they made a lot of mistakes, that's fine. But we justified a lot of things that were frankly not part of the proper democratic system as we do it here in the United States. You had President Obama legislating half the time. You had him create an agency like CFPB that essentially is unaccountable to any elected official. The funding is not even controlled by Congress. It is utterly ridiculous. And that is the kind of thing that allows tyrannies to form and grow. We have to remember.
What tyranny? What kind of tyranny is there going to be from the CFPB?
You have an agency that is completely unaccountable to any elected official whatsoever.
What do you think they're going to do? They're the Consumer Protection Agency. What do you think they're going to do? March on Washington with guns?
Well, they probably are not going to do that, but they can certainly run.
They're going to promulgate shit, just like the FCC.
And in the process, then if they're going to do something like with net neutrality, they can essentially promulgate stuff that's not part of any law or part of a law that's 100 years old, and no one can challenge them on it because Congress can't control their funding. And unless there is a vacancy, the president cannot appoint its head. And apparently, even if there is a vacancy, they're saying the president cannot appoint their head anyway.
That's not correct. Cordray used a technicality that was written into the legislation that created the CFPB to put his own person in. But yes, the president can appoint someone if the head of the organization resigns. The reason that it wasn't accountable to Congress was because they wanted it to have autonomy. Congress is bought by corporations. They wanted the CFPB to legislate to regulate corporations.
Excuse me, and the Federal Reserve isn't?
Well, the money has to come someplace.
Yeah, and what it's supposed if it's supposed to be under control of elected officials, not under something like the Federal Reserve, which is at best indirect control and is not accountable to the American people. God forgive me for using the Weimar Germany example, but Adolf Hitler was not the first chancellor to use emergency powers in a tyrannical action. There were two chancellors who did it before him for over 2 years. Because the Weimar Constitution was designed to essentially say, well, if the elected parliament can't do anything, we'll just let chancellors have presidential emergency authority, whatever the hell they wanted. It basically opened the door for Nazism to use a minority government to take over complete control of the country. Now, we're nowhere near
all
that.
Right.
It needs to be shifted back to the Treasury Department and put back under the control of elected officials. And if we don't like the elected officials who are in charge of it, who are in control of it, if we don't like our Congress, we don't like their president, that's on us as the electorate. Then the people are the problem, and we need to do something about the people.
The people are the problem. I agree.
anything that the CFPB does, the Supreme Court can still strike down
course,
if they make a law or regulation or ruling. The Supreme Court still has ruling over them, right? That's one branch of government they can't override, correct?
Correct. Yeah, you're 100%
correct. The Supreme Court likes consumers far less than the rest of America likes them.
So,
well, that's not the point. The point is there are checks and balances. I mean, they can't just
say,
well... Of course there's checks and balances. So the CFPB is not an all-knowing group. It's not an all... So there's a time for hyperbole. And you know, it was a group put aside for a reason. And there was... I understand that. Maybe it was meant temporarily. I get that. And there is legislation right now. There is legislation for putting under... And there's legislation right now. Rob Portman actually has legislation trying now to put it under congressional thumb. But it's not going through because Republicans themselves can't decide who wants to be in charge of it. So, you know, not much sympathy.
Well, they didn't want it to exist in the first place. And it was supposed to be Elizabeth Warren's baby. And then she wasn't allowed to. They somehow denied her confirmation.
They denied her confirmation of the job that Cordray had. That's right.
Right. They filibustered it.
That's right. So let me clarify this for some people who maybe don't know what we're talking about. This
like me.
This is an agency that was created under the Obama administration to help protect consumers that were getting ripped off by their credit card companies, their mortgage companies, and in other financial ways by big business. Elizabeth Warren came up with the idea or pitched it. They wanted her to run it. The Republicans wouldn't allow her within 1,000 yards of the place. They stopped her from being appointed. So this guy Cordray got appointed. He ran it until the other day. The reason he resigned is because Trump has already neutered this agency with executive actions. The idea that this agency was like a gypsy with nothing controlling it, nothing regulating it.
Name one. Give me
the
an executive
president
order.
Of the United States. I'm
gonna, no, give me an executive order that restrained its authority.
I have to go on Google now and do that, DJ. Take my word for it. That's why the man's leaving.
No, he's leaving to run for governor of Ohio.
No, he's leaving.
That's the worst kept secret in Washington.
No.
And if you were on the East Coast instead of the West Coast, you
DJ,
would know that.
I know that he's running for governor of Ohio. He's leaving that agency because they neutered it. Okay? And by the way, here's another thing I want to say, and I'm not mad. I'm amused by all of this. I love the fact that you brought up Nazi Germany because there's an old saying that says when you mention Hitler in an argument, you've already lost, and you've said that to me. So
yeah, but Godwin made
Godwin's law.
Yeah, but Godwin made an exception for that regarding the Trump administration.
Okay. And then, and lastly,
it's true. Godwin himself was on Twitter saying that we could call Nazis Nazis. We might have he haven't been talking about Richard Spencer actually.
And speaking of Nazis, Greg, I want to do a little experiment. Let's pretend you and I are
not this again.
Okay, and we're having lunch.
I'm going to get this right.
Okay. And you say to me, Kev, I'm not sure about this whole CFPC thing and this guy Cordray leaving. Why does it matter to me? And up to, when I say me, I mean you.
Me, okay. Hey, Kev, I'm not sure, Greg, about this. I'm not sure about this whole CFPB thing, you know, and this Cordre and this. What does it matter to me?
Greg, are you going to be buying Christmas gifts for your girls?
Yeah.
Okay,
I guess so.
You be buying any of them on credit cards?
Sure, I guess.
If this guy, Mulvaney, is put in charge of the CFPB, within a year or so, your interest rates are going to be unregulated and your credit card interest rates can be 25, 35, 40%. That's how it's going to affect you.
And that's insane. That's insane because there are numerous other laws or regulations in place regarding that, including it from the Treasury Department and various other organizations on down.
I don't know who this guy is who's interrupting our conversation, Greg, but pass the salt, please.
I assume the bartender.
Well, DJ, we will agree to disagree on that. Okay.
Yeah. And I would also note that where the courts have weighed in on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, what they have actually said is that it was structured in an unconstitutional manner and needs to wind down and disappear.
Can we also talk about the fact that Mick Mulvaney is already the director of the Office of Management and Budget, and assigning him the directorship of another entire agency is absurd and bizarre?
Yeah,
it's
that
like
is
he's
weird.
Now Jared Kushner. They're going to send him to negotiate peace in the Middle East next.
Didn't you say that Mick Mulvaney the Jared Kushner
ultimately
of our new time?
Yes, he's the Jared Kushner of America's fiscal policy.
Speaking of fiscal policy, the other thing that's going to happen either this week or next week or darn close to it is there's going to be There's going to be a vote in the Senate on this tax bill. And I got to tell you, gang, I'm a little nervous. They need 50 votes plus Mike Pence to send this thing to conference. And gosh, we're counting on the good graces of John McCain and Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, who I think we've lost already.
No, not Murkowski.
Yeah, that you're saying that she's not going to vote against it this time.
Murkowski will. Yeah, I don't think Murkowski is going to vote against this. For those who have not been following this particularly closely, the Senate GOP leadership has put some things into the tax bill, specifically regarding Alaska and drilling in the Natural Wildlife Reserve, the Alaskan Anwar, but it's the Alaskan Natural Wildlife Reserve because there are folks who are of Turkish ancestry who are named Anwar, so they make it confused. Who the hell's drilling into me?
Sounds like a joke Al Franken might be tweeting.
Yeah, we'll put that to one side for the moment. So they put that sweetener in there to win Murkowski over. I think she'll probably be won over. But there are other folks on the Republican caucus. Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, for example, is not happy that pass-through businesses are taxed at a higher rate than standard-issue corporations, so they have to address that with him. There is an open question as to whether Bob Corker, I think, and a couple of other folks who are very, very concerned about the deficit do not like the fact that a lot of the personal income tax cuts expire technically in 2025, but everyone's saying, oh, no, they're not really going to expire. We just did that to shoehorn it in so that it would make the numbers work, which in other words means that we're just going to lie to the American people about how much this is going to cost. There are some Republican senators who do not like lying to the American people about how much this is going to cost. John McCain is one of them. I think Bob Corker is another, and there may be a few others whose names elude me at the moment. What I would like to see Democrats do, if McCaskill's talking about all the things that could have been done, let's see that in some amendments. Now, granted, nothing's actually hit the floor yet, so I'm not going to ask Democrats to amend something that hasn't hit the floor. But when it hits the floor, Let's see some amendments. Let's see the Democrats put up serious tax reform. Let's see them put up Congressman Delaney's plan to lower the corporate tax rates and put in a carbon tax to make it revenue neutral. Let's talk about actually clearing out all the corporate tax avoidances. That was something John Kerry ran on in 2004, for crying out loud, as David Frum noted in his Atlantic article. There are things the Democrats can do to say, hey, look, we really support tax reform. We don't support tax deform. Now, they can't really do that until a bill hits the Senate floor, but I'd like to see them try a bill hits the Senate floor.
You know what, DJ? I agree with you, except I agree with you retroactively to about a month ago. I think a month ago would have been the time to take the tactic that you're taking, which I think is a brilliant tactic, and they should have done. I think now we're so close to a vote that for the Democrats to try to float an alternative bill in public, because we know that an alternative bill is going no place in the Senate. But to do it for publicity, to show Americans what real tax reform could look like, yes, that's what they should have done. I've been waiting for them to do it. It didn't happen. So I just wrote a piece.
Well, and I think McConnell's going to put this up under a closed rule. I don't see there being an amendment process to it. I mean, what he did with the markup was so.
And that may very well be fine. And if you can't put it as an amendment, fine. But at least propose something. At least say, look, We as Democrats can be the party of tax reform, and we can be the party of voters who are interested in tax reform, because there are a bunch of Republicans and right leaning independents who only voted for Donald Trump for tax reform, and they're not getting it, and they're open to us if we reach out to them.
Let me jump in, DJ. Again, we agree in principle. I think the time for that is after this bill goes down to defeat, and we're getting ready for 2018. That's when you go to the American people and say, we're the party.
Absolutely.
We're the party that can actually accomplish this. But here's what I would do now. And I wrote an article and I posted it on our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com today. I think it's time for the Democrats to adopt a new strategy for taking on the majority party in the Senate. And I call it a man-to-man defense. I call it a full court press. What I would like them to do, well, let's step back. What do we normally do? What do you see on the morning shows on Sunday? What do you see on the news shows during the week? You'll see some Senate Democrat come on there. It'll be Claire McCaskill. It'll be Debbie Stabenow. And they just talk about why the bill is bad for Americans. It's very generic. It's very kind of abstract. This is what I would rather see Democrats do. I want to see each Democrat assign one of the Republican senators. And I want them to take them on mano a mano. I would like to see Debbie Stabenow go to John McCain and say, Senator McCain, please tell the voters of Arizona why they should be for an estate tax repeal that will save you he's worth $100 million, about $40 million. But our tax break only lasts 5 years and then gets, sunsetted. Why do you get a permanent tax break of $40 million and our little $1,000 tax break goes away in a year? I'd like to see each senator be put under a full court press by another senator who not just goes on a couple of talk shows and does this, but travels to their state and uses local media and the local papers and the local television to take the case to those senators and really put pressure on them, because I want those people, if they're going to vote yes, I want it to hurt. I want it to have consequences in 2018 and 2020. If Democrats would have some balls and get out there and take these people on the way Donald Trump takes on Democrats, we might have a chance in 2018. If they're just going to sit back and play the same old politics from 1970 that doesn't work anymore, they're going to continue to get their asses wiped.
See, whoa. Democrats did not get their asses wiped last month. Democrats did pretty well last month.
and it was a pretty aggressive campaign.
Number two, I'm not so sure going after Republicans who are not up for office until 2022 makes a lot of sense. I like going after 2018 Republicans. I like going after 2020 Republicans. I like going after congressmen. Which is to say, I'm violently agreeing with you. I'm old enough to remember what happened to I think it was Marjorie Mizvinsky, the congressional Democrat from Pennsylvania, who became the vote that that got the Clinton 1993 tax increase passed, and the Republicans did a full court press on her. And that, if that's the kind of thing you're talking about, Kevin, then yes, that's an excellent idea. But, you know, put it on folks who are actually on the ballot in 2018, please.
I also get really edgy about the idea of talking to a man dying of brain cancer about estate taxes.
No, I don't care.
Like that could backfire.
No, I don't care. I don't care. Good point, though, but I don't care. Okay, so.
And the other thing is McCain, and the other thing we have to remember is that McCain is not a firm yes on this. He is very concerned about the deficit. So
that's
I would
right.
say
McCain
is somebody you can get with honey rather than vinegar. Talk to the issue that matters to him and say, look, we know you care about the deficit. You know what this will actually do to the deficit. Just go where your heart really wants you to go, Senator. That's easier for him. For Murkowski, again, she's not up to 22.
I heard a description of McCain that he's 90% hero, 10% troll. I think we need to appeal to his troll side here.
Okay.
That's good.
You know, you saw the troll come out with that thumbs down on the skinny repeal bill. I think it's in there. I think he's salty in,
let's
you know,
remember,
in this final term.
He voted,
of his.
He's the only Republican senator that voted against the Bush tax cuts in 2001. And by the way, DJ, you weren't on the show last week. We talked a little bit about this issue, and I pointed out that one of the reasons why the Reagan tax cuts worked was because he got 30 Democratic senators to vote for his tax plan in 1981, I believe it was, and I think 33 in 1986.
Right.
And Bush got 12 in 2001. So.
Well, you know, neither of them were on Twitter calling them things like Pocahontas and crying Chuck Schumer. That helps when you're negotiating with the opposition party. If you're not a total dick, you get more done.
Tax policies should not be written by one party. But I want to move on.
Agreed.
We've got a couple of more things that we wanted to talk about, and our time is limited. The other thing that happened this week that, you know, we can't get away from it, even though we talked about it a lot last week, sexual harassment is still in the news. This week it's John Conyers, who is in the crosshairs, seems to deserve it. And I'm just curious, Rebecca, you and I had a spirited disagreement last week.
We've been spiritedly disagreeing about this for weeks. The John Conyers thing, it's not just the story of a senator or a congressman with a great deal of seniority and gravitas who apparently sexually harasses staff and has his staff fly women in for his own sexual gratification. It's the exposure of this congressional slush fund for paying off sexual harassment claims that's loaded up with non-disclosure agreements and secret money that's coming out of, you know, Congress's administrative budget, so we're not seeing it. That's what's really appalling here, is that Congress has gone to some length to create a mechanism to cover up their own misdeeds.
Yeah. With
that's
our money.
It's like the media is the last
right.
venue for justice
that's going
for
away.
Women who've been...
That's going away. And the non-disclosure agreements are going away. Did you guys see Nancy Pelosi on... Meet the Press this morning?
Yeah, no. She said she
wanted...
But I know
Jackie Spire's pretty fired right. up about the whole thing.
Right. If you heard Pelosi, that stuff is going away, because when you've got Democrats ready to do away with that stuff, then you know that it's not going to last long. Go ahead, Greg. What were you going to say?
Right. The estimation I read is that over the past 30, 40, 50 years, it was like 17 million. Was that the right number? Or was that, am I making
that? Let's put it this way. A friend of mine who was a Hill staffer said it was sort of a rite of passage to get your ass grabbed by Strom Thurmond if you were ever in a Senate office building and he happened to zip by you in his wheelchair. So congressmen are gross. Senators are gross. And they've found ways to cover their tracks. And it's about time that we put some sunshine on this little problem.
Right. We need to find out exactly, and it needs to go back. It needs to be retroactive. We need to know who has been spending the money that's our money. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing I think has been interesting about this week is the Democrats aren't defending. I know Conyers, who is saying, okay, fine, and he stepped down from his
committee chairmanship.
Committee chairman.
And then he put himself in front of the ethics board, which, you know, short of stepping down, and he said, we'll see what the ethics board, just like Franken said, all right, he apologized, put himself in front of the ethics board. We're not seeing that from the other side. We're just seeing denials. We saw that with Trump, where I didn't do anything wrong. 16 women have come forward and said Trump did this, and more with more in Alabama.
Do you realize, in terms of half the reason why, among the many reasons, excuse me, let me try this again. Among the many reasons why this is relevant is that Roy Moore is still on a ballot for Alabama Senate, and the people of Alabama will render their judgment on whether he should go to the United States Senate in a little over two weeks. So that's one of the many reasons this is still an issue. But in Trump's defense of Moore and his refusal to abandon Moore, I saw him in the New York Times over the weekend. He is now actually telling people that he thinks the Access Hollywood tape was a fake.
Yeah. He said it wasn't authentic.
Right.
Yeah. He's now trying to, and, you know, I saw somebody doing an analysis of this that's saying, you know, whenever we try and minimize Trump's sheer insanity by saying, well, you know, clearly he's not right in the head, this is the sort of thing that belies that. They use the word beta testing this lie, this falsehood that, the tape might not actually have been me, even though everybody verified it. You know, Trump himself admitted to it during the campaign.
He's
now coming back saying, well, it might not have been me. Might not have been. And there, you know that there's a segment of the population that's going to buy into it. Be like, you're right. It is not you, sir. We could hear you and see you, but it wasn't you. There are people who are so willing to deny the reality of it. It's flabbergasting.
So, Rebecca, I have a question for you then. Will you be voting for Trump for Time Man of the Year?
I will not.
No?
I will not. I know you're shocked by that, as I am now a Fox News commentator by Twitter.
Well,
but no, I wasn't planning to vote for one thing. DJ made a really cogent point, and I want to piggyback on it. If you are in Alabama and you wish to vote against Roy Moore or for him, even because we don't suppress the vote here at the More Perfect Union, but if you wish to register to vote, the deadline is midnight Monday, the whatever tomorrow is, 27th. So please get on that, do that, vote, participate in this democracy. Your vote is your loudest voice.
And also, if you don't live in the state, but you want to have an effect or on the outcome, make a donation to Doug Jones's campaign. I did that this week. I'm going to donate some more money. You know, the more he can buy
really
ads and get out the message of who Roy Moore is, the better our chance of turning that Senate seat.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
So yeah, but if I had to vote for a person of the year,
thank you.
Person of the year, I think I would vote for Jose Andres, the celebrity restaurateur who has been in Puerto Rico with his organization, the World Central Kitchen, feeding people, literally cooking millions of meals. He flew in with a team of chefs, and he's been cooking literally millions of meals for the residents of Puerto Rico as they rebuild their infrastructure. And he's now able to scale down his operation and just, leave it for the locals to take over and provide for themselves.
And DJ, what about you? Now that we bring it up, who would you like to see as person of the year?
You know, that's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
I just thought of the question.
Funny. funny. I am going to have to go going to try a dark horse here, and I'm going to go with Xi Jinping, who is the leader of the Chinese Communist Party. Not only did he assure himself another 5 years at the helm and essentially turn the entire regime into a personification of himself, but he has managed to make communist China a superpower without threatening anyone, and he has even gone so far as to help tip over a regime in Zimbabwe and come out looking better for it, because it was Robert Mugabe who Xi and the Chinese communists said, yeah, that guy can get knocked over. So the fact that he has advanced tyranny in an unthreatening way, when tyranny is on the march in many other threatening ways, that makes him man of the year, and not necessarily in a good way.
Greg?
You know, of course. This one... So I'm going to go with not only because my wife was born Canadian. Born Canadian. Prime Minister Trudeau.
Hmm.
And mainly because maybe we're losing sight of this. But this past year, Prime Minister Trudeau has shown us how a world leader reacts to crisis, to situations with grace and stateliness. And these are the things that we lack and we miss, and how a world leader should act. And these are the things that, he hasn't rushed into any fires and he hasn't saved a village, but these are the simple things that I think, I'll say our current world leader is lacking. A kind word occasionally, eloquence, grace, that really would change the entire face of U.S. politics that we miss. So,
excuse me, Greg. I have a question. I need clarification on this. Are you referring to when he refused to fire his finance minister for a horrific conflict of interest in pushing a tax reform that would have enriched himself, or his complete lack of response to Quebec's horrible attempt to ban wearing the niqab for anyone who wants government services? Which of those were part of his reflection of grace?
Both.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what, DJ? I'm not inviting you to my slumber parties anymore. You're just.
I know. What happened?
DJ to those teach college level courses on holding grudges. DJ forgets nothing.
I remind all of you that outside of the United States, I still align with the center-right parties. I am a Tory in Canada. I am a Tory in Great Britain.
Hey, Greg?
All right. Yeah. Okay, Kevin. Do me a favor.
Pretend we're friends and ask me who I think the top person of the year should be.
One of my favorite parts is that Kevin keeps saying, pretend we're friends. Because in a few minutes, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Asshole, he's going to say. You and your Kasich loving state. Hey, Kevin, who do you think should be person of the year?
You know, you caught me by surprise. I've never thought about it. But now that you ask, I think, a very interesting answer. You know, as you guys know, person of the year is not necessarily the person who did the most good in a year. It's true. Really the person who affected the news, for better or for worse, the most in any given year. And even Adolf Hitler, who we mentioned before, has been Time's Person of the Year once to show how someone can negatively affect the world. With that in mind, I have actually two people that I think should be co-persons of the year who I think positively affected the world in a negative way. I think the persons of the year should be Roger Ailes and Harvey Weinstein. Because those two gentlemen, I think, did more to advance women's issues, bring the sexual harassment and sexual molestation out into the open, to allow women to feel the freedom to speak up. And I think it's going to have positive reverberations for years, if not decades, to come. So I would vote for those two people to be persons of the year, not to honor them, but to honor what their misdeeds, the good that will come out of that.
Yeah, but many people feel like the Roger Ailes and the Harvey Weinstein is literally a reaction to the Trump tapes. And the women's marches and all of this literally came from how
the inauthentic Hollywood
angry.
Access tape.
Right, the fake tape.
Yeah, how angry. Yeah, the fake tape. Right, you know, this male
fake news,
this myth,
fake tapes. Yep.
This how angry. In fact, like a lot of us marched in the women's march. How large and you know, because of
okay, but Trump took himself out of the running. Trump took himself out of the running for Time Person of the Year because he doesn't want to be interviewed by CNN.
Perhaps Time Magazine. Perhaps it should be Billy Bush.
They also didn't actually ask him.
Right.
There's that
he just,
part.
He assumed that he would definitely be the person of the year, but he took himself out of the running.
Unbelievable.
He's like, you know how you make Oscar speeches in the mirror?
Yeah.
Like pretend Oscar speeches, even though you're not an actor and you've never been in a movie. Trump does that on Twitter for everyone to see.
I I honestly think one of his staff said, hey, Time Magazine wants you to be, but we told him you were too busy. And he goes, good thinking. And they were like, or he was like, they
no,
were
you
like,
know what
oh,
he said?
We don't have any good news.
He said, let's let McPhil Mulvaney do it instead.
Yeah. Oh. You beat me to the Mulvaney joke. I was going to make one. Damn it, Kevin.
Well, maybe at the end of the show. So thanks for listening, everybody. We've gotten long. We've got a lot of editing to do. Please follow us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And with that in mind, does anybody have any last words for our audience?
Yeah, I have a question. Are you and Greg really buddies?
We really are. We actually talk
shows. We really do call each other all the time.
He counsels me on my love life.
I say things like, Kevin, do you think I can pull bangs off?
I'm still waiting for him to ask me to the prom.
It could happen.
It could happen. I'll say yes.